Welcome to Digging Deeper. I'm Jeff Norris, lead pastor of Perimeter Church, and I'm joined by my co-host, Laura Story Elvington. Digging Deeper equips you to follow Jesus by exploring the teachings of the Bible and how they intersect with our culture and everyday life.
Yeah, and this season we're digging deeper into parenting. Today we're joined by Joey Odom, who is a thought leader on digital wellness, who shares his insights at conferences, schools, corporate events, and churches.
I think you'll be blessed by our conversation with Joey today as he shares from his heart about not only the dangers of technology, but also the great opportunities.
Yeah, and if you enjoy this episode and find it helpful, bless a friend and family member by sharing it with them. So let's jump in.
Well, hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Digging Deeper. We're in the third episode of this fantastic series that we've been in so far on parenting. And really, as we consider today, parenting in the digital age. And with that, I'm really, really pumped about our guest, Joey Odom. Thanks for being with us. You get the distinction, the awesome distinction of being the only one live in studio with us for this whole series.
Wow, so, is that right?
Yeah, so thanks,
man. What an honor.
Yeah, well, it's our honor to have you in person. And you're also speaking at the time of this recording. You're in person because you're speaking to our school tonight, Perimeter School parents, and they're in for a treat. By the time this airs, that will have happened.
Yes.
And they will all be saying how awesome it was. So
I like that.
I believe that. That's right. I
like that.
Name it, claim it, right? So I'm going to tell you watchers and listeners about Joey. Joey speaks nationally at conferences, churches, schools, and corporate events. He's appeared on hundreds of podcasts as a thought leader on digital wellness. So just add this one to the list. I expect that you'll say by the end of this, this has been your favorite.
This is the one.
Right? Yeah. And so don't disappoint me. He has also hosted the RO podcast over its 100 episode run, which is awesome. Check those out if you haven't already. Joey lives in Knoxville, Tennessee, but is not a Tennessee fan.
I have to pretend. Don't tell that.
Okay.
I have some orange. Yeah, to live in Knoxville,
you got to have a little bit.
You have to at least pretend. So I have some orange in the closet.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I lived in Athens, Georgia for 4 years doing college ministry as a Bama guy.
Wow.
So I did have to wear a few Georgia things. Yeah. It was hard.
You'd bark a few times. Yeah.
No, never.
Right. No, never
bark.
No barking.
Never bark.
Got it.
Yeah. You can't take it that far. So lives in Knoxville with his wife of more than 20 years, Kristen, and their two teenage children, Harrison and Gianna. I love this. His favorite things include morning coffee with Kristen. And then as we're talking sports here, cheering on his kids from the sidelines and rooting for his beloved Oklahoma Sooners, Atlanta Braves. We can all get behind that one. Buffalo Bills. It's a bit odd, but I like it. And Oklahoma City Thunder. Are you from Oklahoma originally?
I am.
Okay.
I'm from Oklahoma originally, so that's where I got myself. I went to Oral Roberts University, which didn't have a football program, doesn't have a football program, so I can claim whoever I want. So I grew up a Sooner fan.
Yep.
So Thunder fan, obviously there.
Yep.
I married into my Buffalo Bills fandom.
Got it.
My wife, Kristen, is from Orchard Park, which is where the Bills play. And then we lived in Atlanta for 9 years, so that's where the Braves love comes
in. That's great. It's a great mixture of fanhood.
Yeah. I
love
like
that.
It is.
Yeah. Awesome.
And Joey, we've gotten to know you a little bit before this conversation, because you came and spent some time with the leadership team here at Perimeter and talked to us about this this topic of digital wellness.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll kick this podcast off with you telling us, like, how did you start that journey? Like, how did that become a passion of yours?
Well, it became a passion through just utter failure. This is where I think, like a lot of things happen, you just start seeing, gosh, I'm really struggling with this. And this is something that I missed, you know, thing after thing, from my son Harrison's very first soccer goal, because I was looking down at my phone, or as we were talking, even just in the middle of conversations, just not being plugged into what my wife or my kids are saying. And so I found it, particularly when I missed Harrison's first soccer goal, I had this realization that something was wrong. I mean, that was the basic. It was just this feeling of unease inside. And the words I have for it now is that I had a relationship with a phone, a relationship with a device, and it was getting in the way of my most important relationships. So if you were to ask me, hey, Joey, what's most important to you? Gosh, relationship with the Lord, Kristen, my kids. Okay, well, let's see how that plays out.
Yeah.
How many pickups do you have on your phone a day? So we can start seeing, like, where the real priority in time and eyes, where my eyes were going, were generally towards my phone. And so I was in commercial real estate for 15 years, and I got a text from a friend of mine, Heath Wilson, who is just as you know Heath, he's just the greatest guy in the world.
Yeah.
And he said, "Hey, I'm having some struggles on my phone. What if we started thinking about how we could help some other families?" So we had a business for years that was all around that. We founded a business to help families, help parents be more present, not for the sake of putting down our phones. We can get into this. There's nothing inspirational about putting it on your phone. Mm. It was more so you experience more fully the greater things on the other side of your phone.
Yeah.
So, but it all began there. It was just this kind of confluence of failure and then opportunity to do something about it. Mm. And since the business, since we've moved on from the business, I'm full-time in communication on that, thinking about, hey, how can we do something about this? And the cool thing is, Laura, that this is the default when we talk about technology is negativity because it's easy to talk about that. And it is. Like, it's very dire. It's very serious. It is getting in the way of so many important things. But even having done this for 7 years, I'm more filled with hope than ever on this. What an unbelievable opportunity. And for people listening or watching, I really do believe this is the greatest opportunity any of us have today.
Interesting.
This is one of those things in life. I think of it like a lever. A lever requires minimum input and gives you maximum output. Mm-hmm. The small changes we can make in our relationship with our phones have tremendous, tremendous results and impacts on the most important relationships in our lives. Mm. So again, like it's easy to look at this and phones and personal technology, even getting into AI, and be like, no, I actually think this is all opportunity. And it's just you all have gone through as a leadership team SWOT analysis.
Yeah.
SWOT analysis, you take strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and you tie threats to opportunities. When you identify a threat, that actually equals an opportunity.
That's right. Yep.
And the larger the threat, that actually means the larger the opportunity to fix it. The end result is so much higher when the threat is so big.
Hmm.
So that's why, again, this is why how we got thinking about this, the way we get why we think about it all the time, why we're so hopeful, because it presents such a massive threat, which means that there's a massive opportunity on the other side.
Dude, that's really good. I want to jump off that because that's probably, I would guess, surprising for some to hear to say, hey, it's not all negative.
Yeah.
And that you have great hope. In the last few weeks, I guess the context would be that two of my daughters, we have four kids, one boy, three girls, and two of my daughters and I, we're all into Stranger Things.
Mm.
We watched the whole series, watched season 5 together,
yeah,
which is, you know, a different conversation for a different day in terms of you know, the good and the bad of that. But it actually created a lot of talking points for me and my girls. One of the things that they both said after we finished the whole series is they both spontaneously said, I wish I had grown up in the 80s. Mm. And I said, why? And of course, this show is set in the 80s. And,
yeah.
And they've heard me share stories about growing up in the 80s, and it's so nostalgic for them, even though they weren't alive, obviously. But they both said immediately, they said, because we wouldn't have phones, and we wouldn't have all this distraction, you know, with technology and so forth. So, to which I affirmed, I was like, yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? Mm. Like, I would love to go back there. Mm. But yet, I love what you're saying about, hey, there's actually a lot that we can get excited about and that can be healthy and that can be hopeful. Mm. So talk to us more about that, if you will. Yeah. Like, what is it that you get excited about and that you think is potentially healthy and hopeful?
I think one of the things is, here we are, January 9th, 2007, Steve Jobs announced the iPhone. Mm. So it's here we are, you know, we're recording this in early 2026. We're 19 years into the experiment. And 2 years ago is when Jonathan Haidt released the book, The Anxious Generation. Mm-hmm. So it was about, I really do put that, we kind of felt some dis-ease, but that was kind of, to me, the definitive moment where we then saw, okay, now we have the data. So The Anxious Generation, for anybody listening who's not listening, Jonathan Haidt is a social psychologist from NYU who wrote a book called The Anxious Generation that gives us all the data that talks through the damage that phones and social media have caused to the younger generation. Adolescent loneliness, anxiety, depression, they're through the roof, and it all goes back to that. And you're waiting for the good news, I know. So the good news is that we now have the data that validates this feeling that we knew, that something was wrong. And so I almost liken it to this idea. Let's say you were walking around for years with a debilitating sickness, a sickness that had no name, mm-hmm. a sickness that was crippling you in everything that you did. And then one day someone said, oh, I know exactly, this is what this is called, and here's how you cure it. Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful news. And so I feel like we're sitting at a point in culture right now where we know, it's irrefutable. We know that social media, that phones are causing isolation, they're causing loneliness. And so as a result, we have a name for it, and now we can begin to do something about it. So that's one reason why I'm so hopeful about it, is the fact that we have a name for the sickness.
Yeah.
And again, in all of this, I mean, I'm an iPhone owner, so mm-hmm. None of this is anti-technology. And so we have this opportunity as well to then begin to train our kids well through this and say, like, okay, we know what this is. My daughter comes to me, Gianna's almost 16, she wants Instagram, and I say, honey, this is proven. Meta knows that this causes anxiety in teenage girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So help me, as a good dad, how would I give this to you? And again, there are people mm-hmm. who are listening, their kids may have Instagram. And again, I welcome people into the gray waters here to navigate this world well mm-hmm. together. And because I think that even with this, I think very, very similarly to the story Sleeping Beauty, I'm sure you thought we were going to talk mm-hmm. about Sleeping Beauty here
of
today.
Of course, yeah.
So Sleeping Beauty.
I had it in my notes.
Figured it was there. Yep. Sleeping Beauty, the story is, the prophecy was given over the young princess that she would one day prick her finger on a spinning wheel. So what did her parents do? They got rid of all the spinning wheels. They got rid of them totally. So the first time she encountered a spinning wheel, she didn't know how to use it, so she pricked her finger on it. Mm. Hmm. So this is another reason why I'm hopeful on this. What if they would have taught her to be great? What if they would have taught her to be great at the spinning wheel? Mm-hmm. Then she wouldn't have pricked her finger on it. And so we have this other opportunity. Technology, yes, it's part of our lives. No, it doesn't have to dictate our lives. Yes, we can teach our kids to use it well. We were never taught that because we didn't have people before us to do it well with. So it's kind of all of this, and this is kind of a mixed bag, I think, of hope and opportunity. Again, if we turn a blind eye to it and say, like, there's nothing we can do about it, then yeah, there's probably no hope on that side. If we say, like, no, we know the cause, we know this is an opportunity to do it well, we know to teach it well, we know this is an opportunity as parents to model it well. This is another thing for our kids over the last 18 years, I call this the 3M parent trap, is that we as parents, we've modeled a bad relationship with our mm-hmm. phones. We give our kids a phone one day, they mimic what we model, and then we get mad at them for mimicking what we modeled, which is insane.
That's great.
Yeah. It's crazy that we do that, but we do. The good news is they're going to mimic what we model. That's mm-hmm. great news.
Yeah.
So we just need to model it well. And if we can begin to model it well, think about the success we're setting them up for. So it's that and a million other things there that I can't help but think, well, I can do something about it. And more so, it's because I'm not subject to something else. I have some power over this. We have infinite power over this. We can do something about it. So I think that is the recognition that we are not destined to failure here, that we have a bunch of say in the matter. I think that's why I feel most hopeful.
That's really good.
That's so good, because sometimes it does feel like we're destined to failure mm-hmm. because of the age we live in.
That's right.
You know, it's so easy as a parent to think, oh, I wish, the 80s, the greatest decade,
I know.
To go back to landlines and rotary phones. I can't remember if it was rotary phones or not.
There is something here that we don't have to dive into, but I can remember being a kid in the 80s and thinking, man, I wish I'd have grown up in the 50s and 60s, because I hear my parents talk about it. Uh-huh. And you know,
of course.
So there's always that kind of generational thing going on at some level. But anyway, I think you got a question.
No, you're fine. Yeah. Well, one of the things you talk about is that it's less about digital devices. It's less about the technology mm-hmm. and more about intentionality.
Yeah,
so what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, this is, again, it's very easy for us to demonize technology. And I'm very hesitant to do that in a lot of ways, because what we're really talking about, what we're really talking about is context. We're talking about context and intentions. So if my son were opening up to me and I pulled out a copy of Harry Potter and started reading it, that would be just as toxic to that moment as me pulling out my phone. And so there's nothing inherently wrong with a book. I believe there's truly nothing inherently wrong with our phones either. And so we've learned how to contextualize when to read books, and we've not learned how to contextualize when to use our phones. So that's one piece, is that we begin to contextualize our phone use, but then we even begin to check our intentions too. Again, I'm not anti-Instagram. I post things from Instagram on speaking clips and things like that. But when I'm when I want to sit down for a quiet time and instead I am scrolling Instagram, well, all of a sudden that phone has become a distraction. And distraction, yeah, just a basic definition, is anything that gets in the way of your intentions. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference with our phones is the ever presence of our phones, is that statistically 91% of people have our phones with us 24 hours a day. So that's the defining characteristic in our relationship with our phones, is our constant proximity, mm-hmm, to them. So one of the biggest things that I'm a proponent of is people learning to spend some amount of time every day apart from their phones. Mm. Just some amount of time.
That's great.
Again, 91% of us have our phones with us 24 hours a day. So when you join the 9% club that starts spending some time away from their phones, some magical things begin to happen. And this goes into a framework that I have called the PID loop. Proximity. Constant proximity leads us to constant interaction with our phones, mm-hmm, which results in utter dependence on our phones, which, yeah, leads us back to constant proximity. By the way, this is how we form relationships with humans as well. We're in proximity with them, so we interact with them, then we form some dependencies in a good, mm-hmm, way. We start relying on them in certain ways. Mm-hmm. So if we can begin to break that proximity, the constant proximity, we will find all of a sudden, gosh, I just had a great 15-minute quiet time, or mm-hmm, probably, yeah, 2.5 hours for you, Jeff, I assume, quiet time.
Well,
when you're not in the soup kitchen. Yeah.
If I'm struggling, yeah.
On the light days, yeah. So this is how if we begin to break this kind of proximity, and to answer your question, Laura, beginning with, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to be off my phone, now what do I do? If we begin with the greater thing on the other side, say, oh, I'm going to go have a quiet time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to introduce the greatest possible deterrent to my focus in this meaningful moment.
That's great.
So let's begin with the other thing. To your daughter's points, because people were interacting with each other. They didn't have this constant distraction, but you can still experience the 80s without the hairstyles, mm-hmm, today, right? Mm-hmm.
That
you can,
thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can begin to experience that by just having focused interactions with each other. And then if you say, I'm going to have a sleepover, with your kids having their friends and stuff like that. I don't have adult sleepovers, by the way. I just want to clarify that. I didn't mean to jump in there. Yeah.
I'm sure many were thinking that.
Yes. Yeah. My wife and I, we do have sleepovers at night. Yes.
Yes.
But, so,
but other than her, right?
But even on a date night, like for my wife and I on a date night, what a cool opportunity, back to opportunity. Mm-hmm. You can rebuild, you can sustain, you can build intimacy with the very small act of just sitting at a date night and saying, hey, will you hold my phone for this? Mm. Can you hold? I think the most powerful words in the English language are, let me put down my phone. Mm. You just say that, and then you accompany that with the physical action of putting your phone away. And when you do that, you've just bestowed value on that person.
Yeah.
If someone on staff came to you and said, hey, can we talk? Be like, yeah, hold on, let me put my phone down. If you just said that and put it somewhere else, all of a sudden they would say, wow.
Yeah.
There, Jeff's with me right now. Laura is with me right now. It's so small. It's so subtle. And then accompanying physically, this is an unbelievable opportunity all of us have in any walk of life, whether you're a parent, whether you're a leader, no matter the context you're in. But it does begin with the intention.
Well,
we're
going to
fight over who talks next.
No, but you go it's okay. It's your podcast.
No, you go.
It's Laura's, okay, Laura's podcast.
But really, why is it? Why is that such a novel idea? Yeah. Like, how is this? How have we gotten to this point?
Yeah.
So I have a friend that just moved into a home, and she was showing me around the home, and in her bathroom, so she's renting this home, in her bathroom, is the toilet roll. Okay, so the toilet roll thing has a little platform for you to set your phone on it.
I'm gonna just,
wow.
It's like,
I'm bowing my head right now in shame because we have one of those.
Do you?
we have one of those.
Wow. Yeah. So I want to know, how is it that we've gotten to the point that Jeff has a toilet paper roller
and
uses it all
in our bedroom bathroom? We have one of those. Which,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
yeah.
But what is it about the phone that's so alluring that it's a big step for someone to leave it in the other room?
This is, I'm going to give you a very long answer.
Come on.
Is that okay? I'm going to give you a very long answer. Well, first, let's acknowledge something. Our phones are a lot more interesting than most of the things we encounter throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My wife's phone is a lot more interesting than me. My wife's phone is better looking. My wife's phone is smarter. My wife's phone is funnier. My wife's phone has so much more to offer her than me. Mm-hmm. except for the physical embodiment, except for the relationship side of things and what you're going to actually give back and give in a relationship. So when we flee, all of us, we flee feelings of loneliness, we flee feelings of anxiety, we flee all these bored feelings. We don't mm-hmm. like these feelings, and we go to something that's so much more interesting, and that makes mm-hmm. perfect sense. So to anybody who's beating themselves up over it, of course you do. Mm-hmm. Phones are super interesting.
Yeah.
Now, we all know that what comes with that is damage to our relational health and our emotional health, our mental health, our relationship with our savior. Like there's a lot of damage that comes from that. And the best metaphor that I can think of why this has happened is, and I'll talk about this for parents who are listening, who are at the parent night. This is one thing I talk about in my talk, is that our phones didn't just enter our lives. Our phones squatted on our lives like a real estate squatter. Mm-hmm. So a real estate squatter, the definition of squatting is when someone enters property without lawful permission and proceeds to act in the manner of an owner. So let's think about that.
Yeah.
They're not the owner, but they act that way.
Yeah.
So phones came in, they squatted, and they said, no, this is my place. And so I own this. But they didn't just all of a sudden take over our lives. They started really slowly, and the very first thing they squatted on was our attention. And they were interesting, and they did things that seemed magical at the time, that are really normal for us now. But when we first got it, I was reading a story on Reddit about this guy, and he was in the airport, opened up his first generation iPhone, said he had a crowd of people around him, and he had a great line. He said, it's as close as I've ever come to experiencing what it must be like to be famous in public.
Yeah.
So it was so novel. And I think at the outset, I don't know that Steve Jobs, I don't know that there were nefarious intents there. I think it was just, they were just really cool. And so then they got they squatted on our attention, and then they moved into our moments. They started robbing us of our moments, like me missing my son's soccer goal.
Yeah.
And then they started squatting on our time. They just kind of like slowly progressed up the chain from attention into moments into time. And then they started to interfere on our relationships. Now they've started to interfere in our futures, where we're starting to feel hopeless, like this is all it is. Mm. Where I think the tide's turning here, though, is we're realizing that it's not just causing damage to us, but it's causing damage to our kids.
Yeah.
This is how smoking changed. When we realized that secondhand smoke was damaging our kids, then we did something about it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you see, and here's what's interesting, since they began tracking smoking in adults, from when they started tracking it to now, I think the statistic is something like smoking in adults is down like 78%. Mm-hmm. And then they started tracking smoking in kids when they started tracking it till now, and that's down 78%, the exact same percentage. So what, again, back to our kids will mimic what we model to them. So it became less normal. So when we started to realize that it was causing damage to our kids, that's when we started doing something about it. So that's why I think the tide's turning a little bit, as we're seeing, I don't want this for my kids, so I'm going to start changing the behavior myself. Mm. But I think it's all of those things that they over 18 years, very 19 years, very slowly kind of crept into bigger and bigger and bigger parts of our lives. They're really interesting. Hmm. They're much more interesting than what we have to offer. But now that we're feeling this damage, again, I speak with college students a bunch. You go to that generation, they are hungry for change.
Yeah, they are.
There are more flip phones in college students than there are in boomers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think boom, my parents' generation, love my parents, but that generation, I think, may be the worst perpetrators here, because they're equally hooked on their phones, but they don't actually recognize the awareness necessarily. I mean, did I just throw a boomer? I just cost you all your boomer audience. I'm sorry. no, but this is...
Joey said that, not Jeff and Laura.
But I do think that that age group, the college age group, they are feeling this. They're feeling like something's wrong here, and it's because with them pushing back, this is where I think we'll start seeing some change. But I think that's why. I think it's all of that stuff, but not the least of which is phones are super cool. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, they're more interesting than boredom. They're more interesting than anxiety. But if I can make a long answer even longer, one of the biggest pieces, the biggest things we're hearing out of college students is this feeling of loneliness and isolation. Yeah. And if we want to really spiritualize this, and I've been thinking through this a bunch, and it is Stranger Things related, follow me here. We may want to cut all this.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to love it. I can already tell. Yeah.
So, Laura, did you watch Stranger Things?
I did, yes.
So we all know who Vecna is.
Yep.
Vecna is a monster.
I don't know who Vecna is.
Oh, not deep in the season. How far not deep into in the series
you?
Then.
You didn't make it to season 4.
I can't, it was a long time ago. I can't remember.
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
So
if you're a Stranger Things watcher, spoiler, you might want to just
repent and then skip this.
Right.
so Vecna is a monster who kidnaps kids. Okay, right. Yep. Rednecks. Right. Vecna is a monster who kidnaps kids and puts them in captivity.
Yeah.
But he doesn't actually kidnap them. The kids go willingly to Vecna.
Mm-hmm.
But why would a child willingly go to a monster? Well, because they didn't go to a monster. They went to a very handsome looking man named Mr. What's It.
That's right.
And here's how Mr. What's It got them to come to them. He isolated them. He separated them away from the pack, and he spoke kindly to them, and he offered them promises. And before long, what they did is they would willingly go with Mr. What's It, and they didn't realize that it was actually a monster keeping them in chains.
Yeah.
And so there's a line, and by the way, I think there is a perfect alignment here for Vecna representing our phones and what it's doing to kids, is that they're isolating them from the pack, they're pulling them away. And Mr. What's It has a theme song called Mr. Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line in Mr. Sandman that says, Mr. Sandman, I'm so alone, don't have no one to call my own. Mm. Please shine your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, give me a dream.
Mm.
So I want you to imagine a child feel, I get emotional talking about this. Imagine a child that feels so alone and isolated. And they're saying, I'm so alone, please shine your magic beam. Now I want you to imagine them in the dark room by themselves with a magic beam of a phone shining in their face on them.
Gosh.
Not knowing that they are imprisoned and abandoned. When all they needed to do, and again, I'm saying this in such dark terms about this, but all they needed to do is go to somebody and seek community. Mm-hmm. And instead of then go to somebody and say, I'm feeling really alone, I'm feeling really lonely. But what happens is this promise of our phones of speaking kindly to us and offering us something that doesn't really give us, which is community, which is connection, when the opportunity in front of us is to truly connect with other people.
Man, if you've watched Stranger Things, you know how poignant that analogy is. Yeah.
I think I haven't watched Stranger Things.
It feels like you may not have. Feels like maybe
no
not.
No idea what you guys are talking about.
We'll find out.
I think maybe.
What are you thinking of?
I don't know.
Only Jeff and I know.
Yeah, well.
Go ahead.
As I listen to you, Joey, so much of what I hear you saying is, yes, of course, the dangers of our phones. But as we were talking a moment ago about the opportunities, the potential, how, hey, not all technology is terrible.
Yeah.
There can be healthy rhythms and habits with it. At the time of recording this, I'm right in the middle of a 21-day fast from social media. We had, I had challenged our staff a couple weeks, or no, 8 days ago, 9 days. We're on day nine. For us all to do a 21-day fast. Now, what you fast from is totally up to you, right? But of all our staff, I think the majority of our staff chose social media, which tells you something right there, including myself. But here's the thing that I'll make a few comments. And I'd love for you to comment on it. Here's the thing that's interesting. I haven't found it all that difficult to not be on social media.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, certainly there've been moments where I've missed it, but for the large part, I'm like, man, this is great. I'm not sure I'll go back to it even, right? Except for the parts that maybe my job requires or whatever. But what I found really hard is I thought not having social media would make it easier to put my phone down. I'm still picking up my phone as much as I probably always have. We were at dinner a few nights ago with a couple, and the wife is also doing social media, and she made the statement. She said, what's been so convicting is when we're watching a show together, she and her husband, and it's time for a commercial.
Yeah.
She said, I immediately go to pick up my phone. And then I go, oh, wait, why am I picking up my phone? I was picking up my phone to scroll through Instagram.
Yeah.
But what I'm doing is, so here's the question. Here's kind of what I'd love for you to comment on. Is part of potentially what I hear you saying, what I know I'm feeling, is that it's not so much recognizing the danger, but replacing it with something healthier, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I don't have social media to look at, but I'm replacing it with, my news apps or game apps or whatever it may be, that I'm still going, okay, I need this. I need this beam from Mr. What's It. So am I right in saying that? Mm-hmm. It's more about what are we replacing it with versus just putting it down, right?
I don't think there's any reason. I'm trying to think exactly how to say this. I think putting your phone down, being off your phone for the sake of being off your phone, is dumb.
Mm.
Why does that matter? Why would we need to do that?
Yeah.
unless there's something greater, unless it's causing damage, or unless there's something greater that we're going to.
Right.
So nature abhors a vacuum. And so when we remove something, we're going to immediately look to replace it. So if we can flip that equation into saying, what am I going towards? And do I need this phone mm-hmm. with me to do that thing? Mm-hmm. If I'm on a date night with my wife, do I really need my phone? It's potentially a buzz in my pocket could derail that moment.
Yep.
So what That's if good. Instead, and this is just for everybody, I love encouraging the date night phone swap, which is just sit down at the table, just swap phones. Mm. That way, if the babysitter needs you, they can reach you, but you're not going to doom scroll your spouse's phone. Mm-hmm. That simple little environmental change, this is all goes back to just the principle of habit. This is all James Clear stuff, Atomic mm-hmm. Habits, mm-hmm. is that environment is always stronger than willpower. And so what I would say is, and again, studies show this, the presence of your phone equals interaction with your phone. Mm-hmm. You are legitimately, if my phone was right here, just seeing it, me wondering what's going on inside of it
yep.
means that I'm actually interacting with it. But something mm-hmm. magical happens when your phone is away from you, is you actually forget about it.
Yeah.
This is why, again, a lot of smart people would argue that this, our relationship to their phone actually isn't addiction. It's more like compulsion. And I can go into some reasons why I don't like the word addiction when it comes to our phone, but when we're compulsively using it, again, back to this PID loop, because it's present, mm-hmm. that interaction only comes as a result of the proximity. I'm not at risk of doom scrolling the weather app, which is what you do when you're older than 45. You doom scroll the weather app.
I did this past weekend. Yeah, we had cold weather this weekend. Yeah. And I was totally doom scrolling.
I'll do it in gravy. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll just find out what is it. I got to know what the temperature is in Boise right now. Yeah. You know, you think of things, but it's only because it's with you.
I think it's a mid 40s thing.
It's got to be.
That's when it kicks in.
It's got to be. It's it's that, what's that, crystallized intelligence that Arthur Brooks talks about?
Or one of the Brookses. Right. Yeah.
So what happens, I believe, is that we, because it's always with us, so 89% of our smartphone usage is self-initiated. Mm-hmm. So let's think about that. 89% of my smartphone usage is self-initiated. It's not notifications. It's me picking it up, wondering what, and just thinking of something to look at. Mm-hmm. What if we didn't have it with us? Again, I've been working on this, thinking about this, writing about this, talking about this, founding a business about this for 7 years. I would tell you that I'm no better with my phone when it's with me than I was before. But I'm a heck of a lot better at not having it with me.
Yeah.
Because when it's not That's with great. Me, I'm not going to use it. You two are at no risk of me phone snubbing you right now because my phone's upstairs, not here in the studio with us. Mm-hmm. So I believe this, to me, this is the biggest thing for us that we have to think about is, one, what am I going towards? And then two, if I know I'm coming in here, I need to change my environment to ensure that my intentions align with my actions.
Yeah.
That's good. So back to your friend on the couch, they would not be, I promise you, tempted to look at their phones during a commercial if they didn't have their phones with them.
Yeah.
So it has to be out of our visual field of sight. It has to be away from our bodies.
Which, by the way, I threw her under the bus, but my response to her was, I do the same thing.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. We're not designed there. If we're sitting around relying on willpower, we are unnecessarily relying on it. We don't need to try to conjure up all of this willpower all the time. Just set our environments conducive to what we want, and then we don't have to rely on willpower so much. It's that decision fatigue concept,
which always applies. And I know we're running out of time, and we just may have to do another episode with you at some point. But what you're saying applies to any other.
That's right.
Situation that, and what I was going to say is, I know you don't like the word addiction, which I would love to hear why, but we don't have time in this episode. But think about any other addiction. You know, if you're alcoholic, of course that applies.
That's right.
Well, if you don't have any alcohol in the home, or if you're not going to a bar, then you're winning a huge part of the battle.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Laura, would you?
Yeah, we do need to land the plane soon. But one thing, I wanted to share one thing, and then I wanted to ask you one more thing. I don't know about your, what is it, Sandman, all this Stranger Things talk. I don't know what any of that's about. I don't know what Vecna is. But I
loved it. I thought it was great.
I had a friend share with me a quote. They said that we're all born into this world looking for someone who's looking for us. So you think about even as a baby, you know, like your baby has, you know, opens its eyes, and as soon as they catch you looking and smiling, they learn to smile back. Wow. And I think that probably sums up what I'm looking for. I can't speak for
this whole generation. But what I'm looking for from my phone is I'm looking for someone who's looking for me. And I think if we can understand that more, and I'm not saying this just to Jesusify our conversation, but we are people who, you know, God initiated towards us and is initiating towards us and found us and continues to find us. When we were far away, he drew us closer. And just reminding myself, I don't have to be looking for someone looking for me. I already have that validation. I already have that relationship. So, but here's the thing I wanted to ask you, kind of as we're wrapping up. What do you say to the parent who has failed? They have failed their children in this area. Or I'm saying that, obviously, nothing is that dire.
Or but at least they feel like
they've failed.
Yeah.
They've said, I'll be the first to admit my my children's relationships with technology is completely out of control. Yeah. Where do they even begin to take some healthy steps?
The very first thing I would say to that person is welcome to the club.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Yeah. Is that it is so easy now that we have history and data and correlations and the anxious generation, it's really easy now, 19 years into this experiment, to wish we would have done something different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have all that information until now. So let's just give ourselves a little bit of grace.
That's right.
Shame, this is not an original quote, but shame is a great indicator, but a terrible motivator. So I want to encourage people to stay away from shame. In fact, the talk I give specifically speaks on shame, because by nature, shame is a lie. Shame tries to tell us lies. Shame takes a mistake we've made in the past, and then it extrapolates into a future that hasn't happened yet. And so it's telling us, because you did this, here's what the future looks like for you and your kids. It's just a lie. Yeah. It is a massive tool of the enemy, and it's very convincing, and it whispers, it doesn't yell, and it just kind of seeps in. So that's the first thing I would do, is say, like, let me make sure that I take this lie. Let's subject it to Christ. Let's compare it against what the word says, and let's begin there. So I would begin there and say, like, let's remove that shame from the equation. It's not helpful, and it's a lie. So that's the first place I would start. The other place, with respect to your kids, this is a Justin Whitmill early quote. Justin, who's a fantastic thinker, he says that neuroplasticity, this idea that our kids' brains reshape, basically that they are malleable, that if you made a mistake, they're going to be okay from it. He says that neuroplasticity is grace baked into the parenting system.
That's great.
I just love that much. It's so good. And then the other thing I would encourage parents to do, one, if you are seeing, I mean, like deep, like 8-10 hours a day of, you know, on your, with your kids on your phone, if you're seeing some like really deep stuff, please remember you're the parent. I mean, that's like go do something, take some drastic action.
Right.
So that's the extreme case, and it's okay for your kid to, it's okay if you see your kid playing in the middle of the highway to pull them off the highway. That's okay. Right. You can do that as a parent. I want to encourage you to do that. The second thing is, if we're not talking necessarily about an extreme example, the first thing I would encourage you to do is begin with looking at a mirror and saying, okay, where am I modeling some stuff that I need to probably edit myself? So let's begin to do that. I'm going to start with myself. I'm going to take a look at myself. Then let's start within your home, maybe beginning with a sacred time and a sacred place that are phone free. Hey, dinner table, that's just a sacred place, and we're all just going to be away from that. Hey, family movie night, we're just going to make that a sacred time. We're going to take that away. So start very small with that.
That's great.
I will say that the value is, no matter the age of your kids, the value of doing something is high no matter your age. And as your kids get older, the pain may be a little bit higher too.
Yeah.
And it's okay to subject yourself to a little bit of pain. That's a little bit abstract, I think, on the answer, but I would say that for yourself is, one, like, recognize you've not gone too far. It's okay if it's in a very extreme scenario, please take drastic action. But in the other case, look at this like building a muscle that you can build slowly over time.
Okay. One of the questions we didn't have time to get to, but I'm wondering if we could perhaps put your recommendations in our show notes.
Yeah.
So we were going to ask you about, you know, concerning teens and digital technology. If you could write a playbook for parents, what would you recommend? And so, you know, maybe there's some things that maybe links to books or other podcasts or things that you could recommend that we could put in our show notes.
Yes.
Man, thank you.
Yeah.
It's been so helpful.
Thanks so much.
Helpful. Thanks. So good to see you all.
I I can't wait. Again, even though it will have already aired or happened by the time this airs, or do you say that in podcast? Airs? That's radio.
I think so.
Yeah, whatever. That works.
Drops.
Oh, there you go.
Laura,
I sound so young. Gosh.
But what our school parents are going to hear from you tonight is going to be gold. So
excited.
Thanks for being here for that. Thanks to you for tuning in, both maybe you're watching on YouTube, maybe you're listening through whatever podcast you listen to, app. Yeah, that. What apps that you listen to your podcasts on? That's what I was trying to say.
Nailed it.
Do you have a phone?
Sadly, yes. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We're grateful for you. Keep tuning in with us. We're going to continue this series for a few more episodes as we consider parenting and all the various aspects of parenting in the 21st century. So thanks for joining us.